Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Start the show with some cock.
Yeah. How are you, Eddie?
Cock's a great way to start the show.
How was your week, man?
This week was good. I had a couple shows out of town. It was fun. Where'd San Diego, Bakersfield.
Oh, yeah. How was it? How'd it go?
They're fun.
San Diego.
Whale's vagina.
With John Huck, our last week's guest.
Yeah.
Did you guys have an epic Taco Bell
epic.
Right afterwards?
No, really? We did not do the epic Taco Bell. He's mad at me for forcing him to eat Taco Bell all the time. So.
He's like, I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
Like, I know he wanted it. I could tell he wanted it. But he, just out of spite, would not allow me to stop and get Taco Bell.
Well, I'm going to try and get Taco Bell to endorse us somehow because we
do. Dude, that would be, if their guests could come in and just have, like, Taco Bell before, and then we could just lock ourselves in this little room for an hour and do a show.
Locking us in just, with Taco Bell in everybody's bellies, that sounds
dangerous.
We'll
just call it Wake Up Hot Box.
What else did you do? So you performed in San Diego. You said somewhere else you performed.
Bakersfield.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was fun.
Was that Saturday night?
Yes.
Was it hot over there?
No.
I always think Bakersfield is just like super hot all
you
the
think
time.
It's like barren wasteland?
Yeah, even if it's during winter. Well, we're not really in winter yet.
Feels like it out. It's in the 50s.
I know. It's like super cold. I was like, I think this is the last day I can ever wear shorts.
Well, it's not super cold. It's only 59 degrees.
Well, you're like me. You like want to always have shorts weather, but you really roll the dice.
I don't mind 50s. I like a nice sweatshirt weather.
Sweatshirt shorts. Yeah. I saw a fantastic movie that I actually want to talk about last night called A Braveheart. Have you heard about this movie?
I've seen the Mel Gibson version.
Well, that is one of my favorite movies.
But I haven't seen A Braveheart.
A Braveheart is about this girl that she actually is born with this crazy syndrome where she can't put on weight. She goes blind in one eye. And she just is like, you know, physically doesn't look like most people. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't looked like most people her whole life. And it's all about – her name is Lizzie Velasquez. And she – goes through tremendous adversity to just – like she just gets haters just every – on the daily, okay? And
the way she looks?
Yeah. And you know what's crazy? It's like she was thumbing through the internet because everybody's a keyboard gangster on the internet.
Oh, I know.
And
internet's the
she
worst
saw
thing.
This. She saw this picture of her and it said world's ugliest woman. And she was like in high school and she saw this. You know, and it's like enough that – you know, you have to deal with high school alone. But it was just like, man, this movie had me in tears like three or four times.
I hate people.
I mean, even like when she was talking about kindergarten and just like how she'd hide behind the posts, like waiting for, you know, kids to go in the class and then she'd go in. It was just like...
Like, to a certain extent, I understand kids doing that because kids don't know any better.
Exactly.
A kindergartner, you can teach your kid...
Yeah, kids are going to point. Kids
it
are
is
gonna,
the responsibility
you know,
of the parents
different.
To teach their kids not to point,
exactly.
like not to do that. But a natural instinct for a child is to go, what did it look?
Yeah.
Which I totally understand.
Yeah.
But for an adult.
And you know what the
for
crazy
anyone
thing is?
Over the age of seven.
And the adult text messages and comments are even worse than what the kids would have said. Ugh, you know what I mean?
Awful.
So it's like this girl, she's only 25 years old. This girl has gone through more negative energy probably in the first 25 years of her life than most people ever have to endure in a lifetime. And you know what? She's just combated it with like positive energy. Like
good.
Now she's you know, she's pushing for this like no bullying bill to be, you know, put in place for schools across the country. And you know, like even as she's like going to meet like Hillary Clinton and like Congress and all these people, you could see like she's getting hate texts.
Oh yeah,
like,
of course.
I mean, it's just. I mean,
of course.
It just made me.
The more
I was
exposure
seething.
You get, the more people.
Yeah, especially if you're so different. And it's like, you know what? It was like watching this movie, it just made me – it was like a reflection of humanity.
I've never understood hating people for the way they look.
Yeah.
I understand I understand hating people for who they are.
Right.
Because I hate a lot of people for who they are. But not to hate – not to look at someone going, ugh, gross, I hate you.
And you know
I've
what?
Never like, understood that.
The amazing thing is her parents – she has a great family. But the amount of – things her family's had to go through.
I can't even imagine. Honestly, it had me.
I was breaking down watching this movie.
Well, because you're a big wuss.
Well, that's true. But you know what? I guarantee you'll shed a tear. I would just get a heart of ice. You got a heart of stone.
Probably just get angry and turn it off.
Well, but you know what? It's pretty amazing to see how she takes that negative energy and turns it into something positive. You know what I mean? So. I just want to say everybody should see this movie. Eddie, you really should show it to Colton too, just because it will open his eyes to somebody else's story.
Well, it's just like with Colton, I try to teach him that people look different. I mean, you try to do that from the beginning. Like, people look different.
Well, I trust that you raise your kids right.
Well, I'm trying to get him to not like Indian people. I'm kidding. But I'm just trying to say you got to teach kids. You got to teach kids not to.
Dude, what do you have against Indian people? Indian people
not,
are
no, brightening you know, that up was wrong. Your life. That was wrong. That's going back to my earlier point about hating people for what they look like. You gotta hate them for who they are. So I'm just trying to get them to hate you.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I can live with that. But I think this movie, I think every kid should watch it. I think every adult should watch it because it'll just give you a different glimpse into, you know, what somebody else with a syndrome they weren't even in control of. What they have to deal with, and I mean, I just honestly, I was so moved that I wrote her on Facebook. I was like, "Dude, your story is unbelievable. You are like, you know, you have more beauty than we'll ever be able to."
She write a song about it.
You know, I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't know if I should take the bullying.
I can't really write jokes about it because it doesn't comedy doesn't work that way.
Oh, you really inspired this joke. That's so
you inspired this joke. I'm gonna make funny.
No, but I mean, dude, check it out. It is really it's something like I saw it as a preview for some other documentary or something, and I was like, I want to watch that. I want to see that. And man, it just blew my mind. I mean, she's done TED Talks. She has talked all over the world. She has talked in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah, but the thing
Mexico,
is, like,
Spain. Like,
the more high profile she gets and the more positive, they're, like, it's weird because the pushback from negative people gets even louder and stronger because
human beings are garbage. You know what? But you also get the other side.
You get the other side.
Many people that are going through it, they're like, you give me hope. Like, you know, you
but
give me inspiration.
Natural human instinct is to polarize something. Yeah. So people either get on board with it where they hate it even more.
Yep. And you know what? Her Twitter is I'm with Lizzie. And I think she's doing a tremendous thing, especially for being 25. Like, dude, I was not being globally positive, you know, or doing something for the
better.
Well,
it's sad that she even has to do it.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It's like somehow, you know, the universe sometimes chooses people to do things like that. And I'm not totally in support of her. So anyways, check out that movie. It was tremendous. I went to a crazy wedding this weekend at a haunted LA mansion.
What mansion?
It was called the Paramore.
Who's it haunted by?
It was haunted by an old silent movie actor.
Who?
Whose wife, I think his name was Romero. Have you ever heard of Romero?
No.
You're like, no. He was kind of a quiet actor, but no. His wife actually flew off Mulholland Drive, but the house has been like preserved. It was like walking into like Gatsby's house, but as if Gatsby
is it in Los Feliz?
Yes,
I've heard of that place,
dude. It's awesome.
It's like nothing's changed in it since.
Nothing's changed, and dude, there was.
I didn't know.
I
didn't know it was even open. I thought people. I didn't know people.
Well, I mean, there was a wedding there, so I went for the wedding. But dude, there was a polar bear there. There was a coyote, like all stuffed, obviously. A triceratops, the fossils. They had, you know, like those old school pools where like it's like the tiny tiles.
Yeah.
You know, I've never actually seen one of those in person where it's just like, oh my God, this is how.
I've stayed in some crappy hotels with that type of pool.
Some Hollywood hotels. No, but it was cool to see that, you know. And
anything creepy happen?
Nothing creepy happened, but like as soon as you walk in, you're like, dude, this place is creepy. And the bride and groom, who was a good friend of mine, I grew up with them, close family friends. He was staying there with his wife alone, and like for the night. I was like,
"Well, yeah, if you're gonna have it there, somebody's gotta stay the night there."
I know, but
have you talked to him since?
No, I haven't.
See what happened,
I haven't.
Dude.
I should reach out.
You
should
call him the next day.
Are you alive? Are you breathing?
Why didn't you call him the next day?
Well, I just, you know, I wanted to give them some space. Oh, to, you know, God. You know.
They've already banged. They know what it's like. It's not like they're still banging.
Well, you never know. It's
2015.
Your wedding night, that's still a big night, you know? It's like it's like one of those things. It's, I mean, you know, you want to get
been there,
lucky.
Done that by your wedding. By your wedding night, been there, done that.
So on your wedding night, were you just like,
been there, done that.
No fire, no
been
romance.
Been there, done that.
Did you carry Tracy into the room? Did you do that? I know you did. I know you're a stickler for tradition. You definitely did. I can guarantee you did.
I don't know if I did or not. I don't remember. No? I don't think I did.
Let me ask you this. You've been married a couple, like over a decade. What's the one thing you remember about your...
You're really tired.
No, I'm not tired.
No, your wedding day. You're really friggin' tired.
Oh, that's what everybody
tired.
Says. That's what everybody
By
says.
By the time you get to your bedroom that night, it's like you have... it's like the most trying you've ever tried. You're so exhausted.
That's what you remember.
Yeah. Because you just want to lay in the bed and sleep. It's not like you just want to go at it like animals. Because you're just like, oh my.
Yeah, because you're just like living. You're basically.
I guess if you'd never done it. I guess if you'd never done it before. You know, like the traditional marriage sense where you guys have saved yourselves into your wedding. Then I guess being excited, but like most normal couples.
They've been there.
And so by the time you get to your hotel room after your wedding day, you're just like, can we just do this tomorrow? Because you're exhausted. You're absolutely exhausted.
I can't imagine. But one day I'll know. Exhausted. One day I'll walk down that aisle. We'll see.
Yeah, and you'll be like, let's just do it tomorrow.
I'll say, you know what? Been there, done that. Got the it looks like our special guest has arrived, Mr. Ray Zepeda.
Hey, how are you guys?
Oh, our studio audience loves you already. How are you, man?
I've been dressed warmly. Yeah.
Were you cold walking in? It was cold, right?
Yeah, it was cold, and traffic was awful today. You can see it from the window.
Hey, your eyes are supposed to be on us, Ray.
No, focus. Focus, Ray.
So, Ray, I met you a while ago. You were playing for one of my former songwriting students' recital, right?
Yeah, for Kira. Kira Hooks.
Kira Hooks has actually been a guest on this show as well. Yeah. Big shout out to Kira. How are you? Anyways, Ray, you started playing saxophone at how old? When did you start getting into the jazzy world of saxophone?
Well, I started at the age of 9, and...
Could you pick up a saxophone at the age of 9? Like, yeah, seriously. Like physically pick it up?
Yeah, I could physically pick it up, and it's an...
Kind Not of the
an,
Barry.
Interesting story. No, the alto. They demonstrated the various instruments at, in elementary school at the various classrooms, and the saxophone looked the most complex, so I was drawn to that complexity. I was into model building and
so the drum, you're like, nah, I don't want the drum. Screw the drum.
And
it's a sexy looking instrument too. I mean, it really is. It's like, first of all, it's gold,
super phallic,
and it's, well, no, but I mean, it's like, seriously,
you see
it's
my soprano.
He's here all night. I'm just kidding. All right, so you saw a clinic. I don't even know if they do that in schools anymore, but they did that when I was growing up too. It's like you'd have like sectionals almost like in a class setting, and you'd hear the instruments. So you heard a saxophonist, you're like, that's
it. I actually saw a saxophone, and I thought, I got to have that. And I was playing the violin at the time, and sax looked and sounded so much cooler.
And you were right. You were so right.
Good choice.
Good instincts.
Yeah, they have machines that do violin now, right?
Good instincts.
The odd thing about it is when I asked my parents if they could rent one for me, my dad said, well, I think we have one for you. I didn't know my father had played saxophone.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
He quit playing before...
He gets like the Skywalkers of the saxophone world.
Dude, that's crazy.
It's congenital or something like that. But
You were chosen.
My dad played saxophone all the way through undergrad, was in the USA marching band.
Oh,
fight
dude,
on.
Fight on. I love it.
I'm a part of the Trojan family.
That's
I ended
right.
Up going there, and so my
Were you in the marching band, too?
No, I wasn't. But
you were in the music
failure.
School. High five. You and I went to the same music school,
all
man.
Right.
That's right. See that, Eddie?
I didn't.
Isolating you. That's one.
I'm used to
that's what
isolated.
Indians do.
My parents actually met at USC. So,
was your mom also a musician as well?
No, she was. She was not. She was an exchange student from the Philippines. My dad was an Arizona Mexican that wanted to advance his life, and studied petroleum engineering, so he went into the oil business and never played his horn again. So I was actually born of two Trojans.
That's awesome.
Due to the lack of one.
Without a Trojan. That nailed
that
it
good. That
out
was
of the
good.
Park. See, that's weird. Your dad never, like, just as a hobby, kept playing.
No,
that's weird that someone would have that in them and just sort of like shut it completely off.
Yeah, he was
that's
too true. Busy, too busy getting busy and drilling. You know,
making you.
I'm just hoping I wasn't conceived under some oil derrick or something.
So many euphemisms already in this show. It's crazy,
California. You know.
So he gave you the saxophone. Was it just like opening Excalibur? You're like,
to an extent, yes. It was a really old case, and the lacquer had really worn off. And, you know, today I think that's something that's cool. But at that point, it was kind of a disappointment. I was hoping for something
shiny,
gold, shiny and golden. But and then I tried playing it, and it kept squeaking because some of the pads were leaking. But we got that fixed. His horn was actually at his parents' house. He had really, really given it up.
And he's so like, I don't need that thing anymore.
He shipped it from Arizona, and I'm still playing that horn to this day.
That's amazing.
Dad, don't ask for it back.
Wow, that's crazy.
Dude, the crazy thing is the older horns, too, were probably made better in a lot of ways, like the old violins. Like, you know, most old instruments sound better just over time. You know what I mean? So did you have to do any maintenance to the instrument or anything like that?
Plenty of maintenance, especially the one time when my aunt ran it over.
Oh, jeez.
Completely overhaul the instrument.
Crazy. Let's talk about that for a quick second. Aunt. Your aunt ran over your saxophone?
Yes, and when I was in eighth grade, seventh grade, she accidentally set it down and forgot it was there when she went to pick me up.
She accidentally sat it under the tire?
That would have been...
I'm just going to sit it here under the tire.
And then what happened? You're like... Did it break in half or anything, or was it just, like, dented in certain...
It actually looked operational, so she didn't think anything of it, and I went to play it, and it wouldn't play, so...
It's divine. So did you take, like, marching band in high school or jazz band? Were you in the orchestra, anything like that?
I was in marching band and the jazz band all through high school, and had a very good... theoretical background from middle school. We had a band director, Betty Jo Barnes, that really drilled us on scales.
Yeah, she did.
Easy there, Eddie.
Oh, no, I can't do one. He's dropped like six sexual metaphors. I do
yours,
one.
Yours was extra
I do
creepy,
one.
It was good, though. It was good. It was good delivery. I like it.
So you got to have that.
So she was drilling you on your scales. All right, go on. Yes, go on.
So that's kind of set the foundation for becoming a...
Was she kind of like one of the major influences on you, like wanting to practice, wanting to work towards being good, or was it like hearing somebody like a Coltrane or a Charlie Parker?
Both apply, but she was instrumental in getting us to practice because she had us fill out practice charts and get them signed by our parents.
Oh, man. You never had to do that. Man, I had...
Well,
I was
in the Cub Scouts. You kind of had to do things and get them signed off.
Yeah, that's the worst, man. Because that's like the walk of shame. Like, you either have to beg your parents to sign off on things you didn't do.
Or you learn to forge a signature.
Yeah, but when you're in fourth grade, dude, that signature does not look like an adult signature.
It's worth a shot.
Get your mom to sign it when she's really sleeping.
Yes. It's totally worth a shot.
Signs off on it.
That's too funny. So what made you want to pursue it then, to call it to the collegiate level?
Well, we kind of choose our avocations based on what we're good at. I just discovered improvisation accidentally my freshman year of high school when just before a high school jazz band concert, our director George Andrews was improvising on some blues at the piano, and I just started finding notes by ear. Later on, I discovered that those were actually blue notes. So I just
those never go out of style. Those are like the go-tos with improvisation. The notes that always are like magic.
What's a blue note? I don't know what you're talking about.
Why don't you explain it? You want to...
Basically, it's the root, the flat third, fourth, flat five, five, flat seven. Flat seven.
Yeah, you could have just said blue note because that means exactly the same thing.
Like the note in the scale. So like there's eight notes in the scale. Technically, there's seven notes, but the eighth is the octave of the first note. So there's seven different notes, and the intervals of each can like basically they're always going to have the same merit in every scale. But certain notes, when you like, if you're in a major scale or a minor scale, depending on basically pentatonics, like that's what the blue notes are essentially.
Yes, they are.
So, like, what it is, it's like those are the notes that are always going to sound great when you play them. So, the cool thing about blues music or jazz music or soul music or any style of music, even heavy rock and roll, it's like you're finding ways to get to those blue notes in a creative way that is inspiring to hear and also familiar, you know. So that's why blues may sound all the same to a lot of people, but it's because there's a tradition of how a person gets to those blue notes. Would you say that that was a good description?
He's yes,
like,
sir.
Yeah, he's like, for a guitar player.
Good encapsulation, I'd say.
Well, let's hear something that you started playing on records, and we'll get to that first. But yeah, what do you want to play first from something that you have brought with us? I should say.
I've got my step-by-step CD that was released and got pretty good airplay nationwide. And from this, I'll start with a Billy Childs tune called Midland.
Midland? All right. Here we go. Let's Midland from Step by Step.
Thank you.
very nice, very nice. Dude, great job. That sounded amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk real quick about your players that played on that.
Well, you've just heard the great Joe LaBarbera on drums. He was the drummer in the last Bill Evans trio.
And for those of you that don't know, I know Eddie, you may not know, but Bill Evans is like one of the most legendary jazz pianists.
So you related to Bob Evans?
No, I don't know.
The famous Sausage King?
I was like, who's that? Maybe his brother playing sax.
No, you know who Bob Evans is?
More on Sausage later.
Yeah, Bill Evans is like one of the legends of jazz. So, like, that's a huge deal. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, who
and
else?
And we have Darek Oles on bass, who's Joe's partner in crime. They both are on the faculty at CalArts. And Darek is pretty much a first call bass player here whenever a heavy international cat comes to town in L.A. And on piano, a pianist, one of my favorite pianists, Rich Eames. He's also known as a film and television composer. He wrote music for Saved by the Bell. And
dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. He's done a lot of...
He's did all those... our studio audience loves it. Oh, and they love Saved by the Bell. That's amazing. When you first, you know, when I was asking you who was playing, you were like, Rich Eames. And I was like, did you say Rick James?
I'm Rich Eames, bitch. He's got to use that, you know.
Totally. I was like...
He's about 7 feet tall.
That's amazing. So did you write all the music with all of this, or was it a cover that you did?
That particular one, the album has 8 tracks, 4 of them originals. That one was a cover written by Billy Childs, who's a multi-Grammy winner and an artist, jazz pianist, and composer here in Los Angeles. And he's recently had a big album. It was a project to reimagine Laura Nyro's music. So I actually gave him a copy of this CD and said, I recorded your tune on it, and he was really thrilled about that. And I told him I paid Harry Fox. So
he's said, like, nah. You're sure? Now, I always wonder, like, you know, when jazz musicians choose covers, like, what is it? Is it the melody that sings to you, or is it the approach that you think you can, you know, maybe change it up to make it new for you? Like, what's your approach on choosing a cover song to record on a record?
Usually I'll discover cover tunes serendipitously and just in a session find tunes that I really play well on, and those are the ones I'll select to really be part of my body of work.
You just moved Eddie.
Stella by Starlight is one of those, and they're a bunch.
That's crazy. And who are some of your favorite saxophonists, too?
Well, in high school, I was really into some of the smooth jazz guys. Jay Bekenstein was really my first saxophone hero. He's the saxophone player in Spyro Gyra.
Oh, okay.
And I enjoyed David Sanborn and Grover Washington Jr. Even though I heard a lot of more big band and traditional jazz growing up in the house, and that's still in my ear. But by the end of high school, I'd gradually gotten away from that and gravitated more towards the straight-ahead jazz. Charlie Parker, I think I bought my first Charlie Parker album when I was... it was the summer between... sophomore and junior year of high school, and I never looked back from there.
So, you know, have you ever heard of Charlie Parker? Eddie?
Charlie Parker. I've heard Charlie Parker.
He's such a badass. I mean,
John Coltrane.
Dude, Lady Be Good, Charlie Parker, forget about it.
Yeah.
Just like the best. You know, the guy was on, you know, Charlie Parker was, he was addicted to heroin, and he ended up selling a saxophone to, like, get drugs. And he ended up buying a plastic saxophone, and he made it sound as good, if not better, than a real saxophone on recordings. I mean, like, dude, I mean, that's just like one of those legends. The masters, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, that's super crazy. So you left USC. When did you graduate, if you don't mind me asking?
That's a Hollywood secret.
You're like, just 2 years ago. All right, you don't have to answer that. Don't worry.
It went on the GI Bill. All the people that fought for the North were eligible for that.
So when you left school, were you like, I want to just do jazz? Or did you kind of venture into other realms of music to explore?
Well, when I left high school, I actually did the next logical thing for a jazz musician, which was to go to MIT and study engineering.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And I was...
That's crazy.
I was actually heavily involved in music in my undergraduate years with the MIT Festival Jazz Ensemble, and studied with a brilliant composer on the faculty there, John Harbison, who won the Pulitzer Prize the year that I studied with him. So it was kind of a hot house a little bit with music, even though a lot of the people were not music majors. And by the end of undergrad, I pretty much had decided that my passion was music. And
is that code for flunking out of engineering?
I actually survived it barely.
My passion's not with engineering. Oh, is that what all these F's mean?
Maybe I should go into another field.
So I took a year to work, and that year became two, and then three, and then four. Then finally, I just, enrolled at USC in the master's program in jazz studies, and that's where a lot of this comes from. I learned a lot about jazz.
So you took all that time off? You didn't play after high school?
Oh no, I played all the way through college.
So you were still doing gigs on the side?
I was still doing gigs.
That's why he flunked out of engineering.
He said he barely passed.
He was up till 3 a.m. playing saxophone.
That's true. It is a hard life.
I used to spend my Saturdays in the music library when they had libraries, listening to vinyl records of Miles Davis and Coltrane, and spend my whole day listening to that stuff. Lee Morgan.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff.
I was a jazz addict.
Dude, that's heavy, heavy stuff. Let's have you play something else from are you going to play something from the same record?
Yeah, let's play the title cut from Step by Step. This is one for you jazz Olympians out there. You'll recognize the changes as soon as we get to the blowing section.
Ooh, the blowing section.
Eddie's favorite.
I'm going to come on you like nobody's ever come on you before.
Here we go, Step by Step. Looking
Great
forward
intro.
To that blowing section. Here we go.
Thank you.
Nice, very nice indeed.
Wow.
Hey, you're quite a player, man. I mean, I definitely hear a lot of Charlie Parker and Coltrane in your playing. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever told you that, but, dude, you definitely have a lot of the phrasing. It's bad. Yes. It's bad as
shit.
Did
you guess the changes?
Huh?
Did you guess the changes?
No, no. What were the changes? I was listening to your solo, man.
Giant Steps.
Okay.
Lifted the Giant Steps changes. You can't copyright changes, so they're open for the taking. So
Wait, say that again? You can't copyright Giant Steps?
The changes.
Really? Oh, yeah, the chords. The chords, yeah, but not the melody.
Yeah, so the title is kind of a pun. Step by step, the tune actually becomes Giant Steps because I've used snippets of the melody of Giant Steps in inversion and retrograde, and eventually as it gets towards that great blowing session, it becomes Giant Steps fully.
I have no idea what you just said.
Okay, so Giant Steps, Eddie, is it the reason why it's, I mean, really why it's called that. It is one of the hardest songs to actually improvise over because there's so many changes, and the changes come so fast. I didn't hear the bass player playing a lot of the changes. He was probably doing inversions too then, right?
No, he was, when he was walking, he was playing the changes.
I have to listen to that again, man. Yeah. Damn, that was...
He was nailing him.
he's awesome, man. He's in the pocket, dude. Like, crazy, crazy good.
That was actually the last take of a 10-hour session. Everything on the album was done live, and no overdubs, no punch-ins or anything. So it's the session was supposed to end at 7 p.m., and we started that take at 6:50, and this is our last try at it, and Joe LaBarbera just nailed it to the walls.
Dude, that's
crazy. He nailed
crazy.
Every take. But he was sick as a dog that day. I remember that distinctly, and it didn't show. A great session.
Jazz musicians, they're on such a level, man. It's like, first of all, they record 99% of every jazz record I've heard. It's mostly live in the studio, no overdubs, you know, like all the great records, you know, most people don't do it like that now. They take shortcuts. So I appreciate it. That's why I love featuring jazz artists on this show, because they are really, to me, the most talented. They could do the classical bag, but they can also do the jazz bag, and usually classical musicians can't do the other. You know what I mean? It's like a classical musician improvising is a scary thing sometimes. But yeah, man, dude, it's amazing. Like, so you've been kind of playing with all kinds of seasoned cats. Most of these guys are older than you. Was that out of a preference, just because they have a little bit more of a seasoned sound or a vibe, or what?
I wasn't really concerned with the age. I just knew from listening to different players in L.A. who I wanted on the record, and I made the calls, and I was really honored and thrilled that they were available to do it. So it was a great day. I had a great engineer on the session, Steve Kaplan, mixing engineer David Bondolevich, and it was mastered by Bernie Grundman.
Oh, he's the best, man. Yeah. He's who does my records, man. He's the best. And he loves jazz.
Yes, he's really a jazzer.
Dude, he's like
that's where he comes from.
Yeah, that's his favorite. He actually invented mastering. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. He was the first person that they asked to like create a master from the mixes, and he's the one that invented it. Like, he doesn't take credit for it, but he's the one that actually was the first. You know, I've done a lot of records with him and learned like how just unbelievable he is. He did Michael Jackson's records, Prince's records, but he's like a huge jazz guy. He did all of Zane's records too. He's a huge fan of Zane. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, dude, you sound incredible. I mean, honestly,
Thanks. The
crazy thing is like it's with jazz musicians, it's really hard for, you know, people to hear the voice in a player sometimes. But man, you seriously, you're laying it down like there's a gun to your head, and it's the last thing you're gonna lay down. I mean, everything that I've heard so far is just, it's magnificent, man. It really is. It's really great.
It sounded like I was running for my life on that one.
Are you ever intimidated by the players that you're getting on these records? Like, okay, I better have my shit together.
sometimes it still happens to this day. You know, some types go to Smalls in the Village in New York and try to sit in on a jam session, and wow.
there's some players, especially players. Yeah, San Francisco, New York, those two cities have like for the jazz scene, I feel like those two cities are where it thrives the most. LA's got a scene, but it's so spread out, and there's more, like, there's some heavy cats in LA, but they're all over the place, whereas New York and San Francisco, they're such condensed cities that you just feel like you're around all of them all the time, so it's a little intimidating. But man, you sound great. You're a beast in your own right, man, for sure.
Thanks.
Let's play something else. What are you going to play us? What's next?
Well, one of the things I'm working on right now is I spent kind of went back to my roots a little bit. I lived in Bakersfield for about 3.5 years and discovered this cauldron of creative energy that was smoldering there. Just never had a
harnessed.
Just never had a creative voice or an outlet to really manifest what they're capable of. So I started this Bakersfield New Music Collective that is going to play on two cuts on my next CD that I'm working on right now. And I thought what I'd do is play a couple of scratch recordings of those two pieces. There are a lot of great players in the ensemble. We have Doug Davis, who's pretty much the impresario of the Bakersfield Jazz Festival that has gone on for nearly 30 years now, and he's been there for a good amount of that. He's been teaching at Cal State Bakersfield for over a quarter century. You've got Chris Tyner on trumpet, who's one of the foremost exponents of what you would call improviser music on trumpet, or loosely also called free jazz or avant-garde jazz. And then also we have an iconoclastic keyboardist named Jay Smith, who is actually a radio host in his own right. He has a successful jazz radio program. That's not an
I think you're getting Eddie all hot and bothered. That's the way not you're talking about
oxymoron. He actually has a piano hour up in Fresno. So I thought I might play a little bit of this piece I wrote almost 20 years ago called I Care If You Listen, and it's kind of a tribute to a 20th century composer named Milton Babbitt, who will actually turn 100, or would have been 100 next year, and it uses a lot of the same tone rows, if you will. It's atonal jazz that Milton Babbitt used in his piece All Set from 1957, which is a kind of a mix between jazz and classical. So we'll just play a little bit of I Care If You Listen.
I Care If You Listen.
So that's like a.
The reason we're. Hold on. You got to turn that Vader up for a second. The reason that was so funny is because none of us were prepared for him to be like, and we're done.
I'm done. I'm like, oh, okay. That's quick.
Eddie, your face was so. That was so classic. It was. Because that's how avant garde jazz is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was all actually music. written out.
It had a very Peter and the Wolf on acid and really depressed vibe. But.
I like Babbitt Does Brooklyn better.
And back came Grandpapa. Dude,
I wish I could have videotaped Eddie's expression.
Why? I was like looking at something and then. I saw the cut sign. I'm like, oh, fuck. No,
because it was like, cut. And then Eddie was just like, you had this expression that you're like, oh, shit. Like, and, you know, you didn't see it coming, but how could you? That was what was funny. It was like, you've been so elegant about the
I think you're
face.
Enjoying this way more.
Oh, my God. That was too funny. I'm sorry. No, it was really amazing. Eddie, you've been doing a great job on the fades. That's why.
Oh, thank
you. Like,
God.
I've been noticing your
attention. I'm a master fader.
Anyways,
I love
I'm
Master
so sorry.
Fade.
That was no, honestly, that was super cool. What a like a heavy progression. Like, who were the players on that again? One more time.
Those were actually USC players. It's an old
right.
recording.
Fight on.
It'll be Fight On. It'll be re-recorded with the Bakersfield New Music Collective on the next CD.
Very cool. So, where can people find you?
RayZepeda.com.
Spell it out for our listeners.
RayZepeda.com. Also, at RayZepeda Music is Twitter. I've got some shows coming up at Sharks Cove tomorrow night and next Wednesday with Dave Maciel and the Groove Roulette.
And where's that at?
On Manhattan Beach Boulevard in Manhattan Beach, and I'm also playing at the Lighthouse on the 18th with a great Sinatra-style singer, Danny Fryer. That ought to be fun.
That's at Hermosa Beach, right?
Yeah, Lighthouse. That's Hermosa Beach. And I'm also in a kind of a funk, soul, R&B, old school band called Mind, Body, and Soul, led by Rhythm Epkins of English Beat fame. And we have... Friday, December 18th at the Hermosa Saloon. Saturday, January 2nd at Frog and Peach Pub in San Luis Obispo.
Dude, I've played there. I haven't played there in a while, but man, that was where I started.
And then Saturday, February 13th at the Thunder Valley Casino in Sacramento, opening up for Dennis Edwards of the Temptations.
Nice.
So. Do we have time for one more quick one?
We'll play a little bit of it. Yeah, we'll play a couple minutes of this.
Let's play. From the ridiculous to the sublime, or vice versa.
Good segue. I like that. What are you trying to take our jobs now?
I'd like to.
It doesn't pay very well.
This is a track by Phlobis, which is a heavy rock, funk, punk band that I play in that is big in the South Bay. And this piece is called, or this tune is called, Ride the Sausage.
Ooh, there we go.
Eddie's favorite.
Can't wait.
Ride the Sausage. Ride the Sausage. Eddie.
just wanted to, I wanted to get to ride the sausage before we cut it off.
Job well done.
All right, everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in one more time.
Raise the Peta Music.
At RaiseThePeta Music and then RaiseThePeta.com.
That's it.
That's it? All right. Thanks for being our guest, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Have a good night, everybody.
We'll see you next week.